This week on Family Anatomy, Anatomy of a Secret Sadness, Part 1.
The hosts of Family Anatomy are psychologists, but they're not your psychologists. So if you want to talk to someone about family or mental health issues, you can get a referral from your family doctor. This show is for information only.
Hello and welcome to Family Anatomy, your source for parenting and relationship information with your hosts, Dr. Giuseppe Spizzano
and Dr. Brian McDonald. You can find the show on iTunes or you can find us at familyanatomy.com, and we're going to get right into it. Because really, this show is turning into the family attachment show.
Yes, we've had several shows on this topic. I mean, there's always a bit of a variation, and tonight it's going to be different again. Tonight, we're going to be talking to Dr. Valerie Whiffen. She's a psychologist in private practice in Vancouver. She's also an adjunct professor of psychology at the University of Ottawa, and her primary research and clinical interests are in gender and depression. She's in her 25-year career as a researcher, professor, and therapist, she's authored more than 50 professional and research papers and 2 books. And her latest book, which is what we'll be focusing on tonight, is called A Secret Sadness, The Hidden Relationship Patterns That Make Women Depressed.
This is very interesting for me because Dr. Whiffen was my research supervisor when I was doing my PhD in psychology. So I know her from years ago, and we've talked about attachment years and years ago. There's a reason why we're talking about attachment, and certainly it's not just us. If you go out and look at a lot of the new books that are coming out about depression or the self-help books, a lot of the parenting books, it's all about relationships. And these are things that Dr. Whiffen and I were talking about 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yes, that's true. It's 10, 15 years ago, but the tide has really turned, and this has really become a focus of a lot of research and a lot of clinical practice, too, the understanding of emotion and how that affects relationships and attachments, and all those topics are coming together in a way that I think is very meaningful for people and is really connecting and I think energizing a lot of people as well.
I think so. I mean, we did an episode a while ago, well, not that long ago, but I think 2 episodes ago or 3 episodes ago, we talked about the parent-child bond. Our last episode was all about trust, and it's hard to think about trust without talking about relationships, because if you're sitting by yourself, who do you have to trust? It's just yourself. So those were all about relationships, and now we're going to talk more about the impact, the kinds of things that can happen in relationships when your expectations aren't being met or you're worried about being rejected or things just aren't going right in a marriage.
Right, and particularly for women, which is Dr. Whiffen's focus. But of course, she's focusing also on heterosexual relationships. So men and women are both involved in these relationships, obviously, and she does talk about how men affect women and how the attachment between people in marriages, whether they be secured or insecure, affect the way things transpire between them and go forward between them, but also how it affects the children.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, though, she's not just talking about how the relationship leads women to become depressed, but how depressed women have an impact on their family relationships, because they obviously, when you're really distressed, you're going to engage in certain kinds of behaviors, either to get help or, well, there's all kinds of things that we're going to talk about with Valerie for sure.
That's right. So you're not sure which came first. There's that chicken and egg thing. Was this woman depressed to begin with, and that's what affected the relationship, or was it the relationship and the insecure attachment that the woman's feeling in it, the thing that created the depression, really, there's no way to know for sure which comes first, and it's not really that relevant because in the end, the type of treatment that you're looking at is going to be the same.
Well, that's true. I mean, it doesn't matter what... the fact is, a lot of the research is on how relationship problems are affecting women over the long term. And they tend to have more of an impact on women. And I think the reason for that, if you go through all of the research, the reason for that is that women stereotypically are the caretakers of a relationship. Women are the ones who the relationships are seem to be more tied to a woman's self-esteem. So when there's problems in the relationship, they tend to take it more personally.
That's right.
And it's a generalization, obviously, but this is what the research is talking about.
That's right. So it tends to be the state of the relationship's more tied to their self-esteem. If it's not going well, it can lead to depression, I guess, is what we're trying to say. But you know what? This is something that I think Dr. Valerie Wiffen is going to be able to explain for us a little bit in more detail. So why don't we go ahead and start talking to her?
Absolutely. I mean, you're not listening to the Family Anatomy podcast to hear Dr. Brian and Giuseppe talk. Let's talk to Dr. Wiffen. We'll get her on the phone.
And now we'd like to welcome Dr. Valerie Wiffen to the show. Hello, Dr. Wiffen.
Hi, Giuseppe.
I've got my partner here.
Right across the table.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Valerie. How are you?
Great. I'm enjoying some pretty balmy weather out here in BC.
That's nice. And the jealousy is just wafting across this room right now. We're in cold weather with some snow going.
Ooh.
Yes.
Well, you remember that. You used to be...
I remember that.
And now you're on the Sunshine Coast.
Yes. Very appropriately named today. It was a beautiful day.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Well, listen, we've been reading your book, A Secret Sadness, about the hidden relationship patterns that make women depressed. And both of us, both Giuseppe and I, read through it and felt like you had some really great ways of talking about different kinds of parent-child relationships.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
In terms of the turning the volume up and turning it down, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, maybe I'll just back up a little bit before I talk about that and just talk about how parent-child relationships are really, they're the primary relationship that a child has in their life, right? It's the first exposure that they've had to another person. And so the parent-child relationship kind of forms a template for how the child thinks they're going to be treated by other people. So in an ideal world and in an ideal parent-child relationship, the impact that the child has on the parent is really positive, and the parent responds to them with care and with warmth and love. And that creates a child who can go into the world expecting that the world's a pretty benign place, and that they'll get pretty good feedback from the people that they approach or they interact with, that people will treat them with care and with kindness. So turning up and turning down the volume refers to those kids who don't get that really ideal, great experience in the relationship with their parents. Kids, when they feel insecure, emotionally unsure of themselves in that primary relationship, they tend to either turn the volume up or they turn it down in their relationships, not just with the parent, but with the world at large. Now, a kid who's turning the volume up is one who parents may recognize is they kind of make a big fuss about things. They can be quite demanding. They can get angry a lot with the parent and tell the parent that they don't like them. They're kids who seem to be have a lot of emotions, and they're quite willing to express their negative emotions. So that's turning up the volume.
So what you're saying there is, so there's the kids who have a secure relationship with their parents, and we're not really talking about them today so much. We're talking about more the kids who have this insecure relationship, and by them turning up the volume, they're trying to get a sense of comfort or responsiveness from their parents, and that's why they're doing some of the things you're saying. Is that correct?
Well, you know, I'm not even sure that the first part, yes, that is what I'm saying, that we're talking about kids who are insecure in their attachment relationship with their parents. We're not talking about the secure ones. When a kid's turning up the volume, you know, I'm not even sure that they're aware that what they're looking for is comfort from their parent. Sometimes they just feel really angry at the parent for letting them down, for not being the kind of parent that they need, for not giving them the warmth and comfort that they're looking for. So they are genuinely angry. They're not doing that as a way of getting comfort. It's more that they're responding to the lack of care or to the rejection.
I think a lot of people believe that that secure relationship, so when a parent is responsive, those kids really learn how to modulate or control their emotions in a different way. They don't have the high highs and the low lows like kids who are turning things up might.
That's right. Yeah, when a parent is responsive, then the child learns, you know, they can make a demand at a really low level or in a low key. They can make a demand, you know, in a very casual kind of way, you know, Daddy, can you help me with this? Or, you know, Mom, I climb onto the mom's lap. And they do that with the expectation that they'll get a response. The kid who turns up the volume is one who doesn't really expect to get the response that they're looking for. And so they're already maybe angry at the beginning of the interaction.
Okay, so that's that type of thing where you're turning up the volume. What about turning down the volume? How is that in contrast?
Well, in contrast to that, it's kind of helpful for people to understand that the parental behaviors that are linked to turning up and turning down the volume. So the parental behavior that's linked to turning the volume up is showing anger toward the child, being critical, rejecting them outright, actually pushing a kid away or pushing them off your lap. That's the kind of behavior that is associated with the child learning to turn up the volume. Now, in contrast to that, when parents seem kind of indifferent to their kids, you know, when they're not really interested in what the child has to say, when they seem preoccupied with what they're thinking about, or a parent who maybe just sits and reads and just says, or watches a hockey game without really interacting with the child. That kind of parent who is conveying indifference in the child, that seems to be associated with turning down the volume. So the child learns pretty quickly, actually, that no matter what they do, they're not going to get the parent's attention. And so what they learn to do is to shut down their emotional needs and to not articulate them, and that way they won't be disappointed.
So when you talk about those parents who are rejecting and the parents who are just totally indifferent, how does the parenting style, the authoritarian and the authoritative kinds of parents, fit into that parent-child attachment dance?
Boy, that's a really good question. I would guess that an authoritarian parent is much more likely to be rejecting and critical of the child, because an authoritarian parent is someone who has a very clear idea of what the child should be like. And the authoritarian parent is someone who often has very strong values about child rearing and about very strong moral values that they're trying to impart to the child. And so the authoritarian parent is someone who's got a really clear idea of what is appropriate behavior. And so when the child doesn't do that, or if they display some characteristic that's not acceptable to the parent, then the parent is very likely to correct them quite harshly, you know, bring them back in line.
Mm-hmm.
In contrast to that, the indifferent parent may seem on the face of it somewhat permissive. You know, they could even be in a kind of offhanded way fairly positive about the child, but they're not really present. They're really focused more on themselves. They don't really know what their kids are doing a lot of the time, and they tend to be inconsistent in terms of discipline. They tend to be permissive parents, tend not to follow up, for instance. If they ask a child to clean up their room, they don't check back a half hour later and say, okay, how's it going? Do you need a hand with this? this. And that conveys to the child that really it doesn't matter what they do or say. I think, you know, some parents may be at this point a little bit confused about what they should be doing with their kids, because I've told you so far that it's not a good thing if you are too involved in the kids, in the child's life, and you're talking to them, you're being critical of them and being too directive with them. That's authoritarian parenting. And it's also not a good thing if you're not paying enough attention. So a lot of parents, like me, kind of struggle with, okay, how do I find the middle ground there? How do I do what's best for my child in terms of my involvement with him or her? And what we know from the research is that authoritative parenting is the one that has the best outcomes for kids. An authoritative parent is one who does have expectations for their child and does set reasonable kind of rules and set reasonable goals for the child, reasonable being that they're age appropriate, they're not excessive. But they also are concerned about the child's relationship with them, and they generally interact with their kids in a very warm and caring manner. So an authoritative parent might be someone who thinks it's very important to learn a musical instrument, say. So they discuss this with their child, but then the child says, well, actually, you know, I'm not at all interested in music. So the parent then looks for another solution that takes into account the child's perspective. If, for instance, maybe the important part of learning to play an instrument is really just the discipline. That's what they're aiming for. And they can see that a child could develop self-discipline in a different way. So an authoritative parent would be one who kind of thinks a little bit about what their goals are for the child and then can find a way to meet those goals that also are consistent with the goals that the child has for him or herself.
Right. So the parent would have those high expectations, potentially high expectations, but also would listen to the child's response to those things and try and take the child into account and maybe even meet them halfway.
Absolutely. Meet them halfway, change the goal so that it fits better for the child. And I think the other thing about authoritative parenting that's important is really the emotional tone of the interaction. An authoritative parent is a parent who's always aiming for the relationship to be warm and loving and caring, where an authoritarian parent is one who can become very angry and cold with the child, particularly if the child does something that he or she doesn't like.
And they can use the relationship almost as a punishment.
Absolutely. They can withdraw their love as a way of coercing the child to do what they want or punishing them for not doing what they want.
So would you say then that there's such a thing as being too, you wouldn't put it in this way, I guess, but too responsive to your kids? Like the permissive parent isn't too responsive. They're not responsive enough, or they're not present enough, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's kind of tricky with permissive parents, because a permissive parent could be someone who's just super supportive and really wants the child to find their own direction and their own way. But often, and you guys know this as parents too, that children need structure and they need feedback. And often a parent who's categorized as permissive as one who isn't really paying attention to what they're doing, isn't really, for instance, checking on, you know, how'd you do on that math test. And a permissive parent is someone who seems to feel that the child will just grow on their own. And what that can convey to a child is really lack of interest. So permissiveness is something that it's not a question of being too responsive, I think. It's a question of not really being tuned in enough to what's happening with the child.
It gets quite complicated because there's another set of factors that we can also throw into the mix here, which is a baby's temperament, and every baby has a different temperament as they're growing. How do you understand temperament in association with the different attachment styles and different parenting styles?
Well, we know that temperament does influence the attachment style that a child ultimately defaults to. And a child who, for instance, is somewhat nervous or shy, behaviorally inhibited, so that they have difficulty initiating contact with other people. They're kind of fearful. They don't really like novelty a whole lot, and they step back and watch it. That child is more likely to turn down the volume. It kind of makes sense, because that's sort of consistent with their fearful step back and watch nature anyway. And a child who is more emotionally reactive might be more inclined to turn up the volume if they feel insecure in that parenting relationship. So we do know that attachment is linked to temperament, but what we also know, and I think this is what makes it really complicated, is that matching occurs between the parent's temperament and the child's temperament. So attachment security is much more, it's much easier for a parent to achieve if the child is temperamentally matched to them. So they get the child and they get the way that the child typically responds to situations. A parent who's a little on the cooler side, that coolness, if they're matched with a child who's also temperamentally kind of on the cool side, that wouldn't necessarily be an insecure attachment relationship, because the cool child kind of understands where the parent is coming from and wouldn't necessarily feel insecure in that context, if that makes sense.
We've been talking about it on the show the last few episodes about attachment and the parent-child relationship. And I read an article not too long ago that was talking about how scientists now are not just thinking about nature and nurture anymore, but they also are wanting to include a third factor, the parental involvement factor. So I think it's timely that we're talking about all of this, particularly in that when we go through your book, we see that there are certain kinds of attachment styles and parenting styles that eventually might put people at greater risk for developing a depressed mood down the road.
That's right. Yeah, what we know from the research that's done, both on children and on adults who then reflect about their childhoods, what we know is that people who are prone to depression, either typically depression first occurs in adolescence, so adolescents and adults who are prone to depression tended to be insecure in their relationships with their parents. And that insecurity could have taken either form. They could have learned either to turn up the volume or to turn it down in that parenting relationship. Both of those strategies can lead a person to become depressed later in life.
And that's it for part one of our interview with Dr. Valerie Wiffen. Visit us at familyanatomy.com, or you can email us at info@familyanatomy.com. And Dr. Brian?
Find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. As usual, we'll leave you with a bit of a tune by Brother Love, and he's over at brotherloverocks.com. See you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening. So get up and sing. It's a family thing. Hey! You know what to do. FamilyAnatomy.com